We are excited to have with us on the show tonight the Wolf Twins, Kyone and Kalina. They always have something exciting to tell us about, so let's hear what the two of you have been up to.
Well, we just got back from Denmark, where we investigated the secret diary of Michael Jackson,
which is being eaten by one large voracious moth.
But our big project this year involves reanimating a woolly mammoth,
which we're doing at an undisclosed site near Saskatoon.
Now, you two sure do keep busy. What other surprises does 2014 hold for you?
Don't tell them about the situation.
Connected to the deal? About the thing?
Because of the thought about that idea.
You mean the concept with the place?
Yeah.
It's almost as if you two speak your own language.
Oh, we definitely do.
Talsipan Rolan Kam Nemoskin Rukbenerchka.
All right, well, we've got a great show for you tonight. Our other guests are Cuba Gooding Jr. and Amy Grant. Can you two stick around?
No, we recently cloned Charlemagne.
We're starting to wake up and notice the surroundings.
So we have to go deal with that. But thank you, Tucker.
Also, we want to go listen to a very interesting radio show on the lives of people like us.
And now the only man to date both Ann Landers and Dear Abby,
Colin McEnroe.
It is true that both Ann Landers and Dear Abby were identical twins who sort of individually got into the advice column business. It is not true that I dated both of them. Maybe one of them. And we are talking about identical twins here today. And the intro is a little bit of an homage also to Bob and Ray, who had a pair of twins called the McBeebe twins, who did speak that way. All right. So we have twins, identical twins in the studio. You're going to meet them in just a little while. Two sets of identical twins, really three sets of identical twins, because we have Beebe twins who will not be participating on today's show other than to occasionally cry if they need to. So we'll tell you all about the people who are here in the studio, but we're also going to talk a little bit about the science of twins. Obviously, twins have been the focus of all kinds of study. They have been for generations really at the heart of the debate about heredity versus environment, nature versus nurture. In many ways, for many years, they were really the way that you could study it. There was less access to the kind of genetic information that we can see up close these days. So the way you studied what was environmentally conditioned and what was part of our heredity was to study identical twins separated at birth, usually. But there's all kinds of other ways in which twins have been of interest to science, to medicine, to psychology. Joining us right now to talk a little bit about that is Dr. Nancy Siegel. She is professor of psychology at California State University Fullerton and director of the Twin Studies Center, which she founded in 1991. She's also associate editor of Twin Research and Human Genetics, the official journal of the International Society for Twin Studies. She herself is a fraternal twin, not an identical twin. I should say who's in the studio, because they may have questions. You guys may have questions for this twin researcher. So I'll introduce who's in the studio, Joy Taylor and Amy Melvin. They're identical twins who grew up in West Hartford, and Roger and Danny Castangue are identical twins who grew up in Enfield. They are here with us. One of their wives, Heather, is also with us with brand new twins, Lucy and Layla. They'll be the babies you hear crying in the background at some point. Dr. Nancy Siegel, we are going to begin with you. And so let's sort of just first of all begin with the term identical twins or monozygotic twins. What does that mean? What is an identical twin?
Well, an identical twin is someone that results when a single fertilized egg divides between the first and 14th day post-conception. And these twins share 100% of their genes in common. They are always of the same sex, two males or two females. But I must point out that identical twins are not exactly the same in every way. There can be cellular errors at the formation of twins. Various environmental effects can kick in to make for differences. But nevertheless, they're still more alike than any other pair of people. I also want to point out that the twin method would not be what it is today without fraternal twins. Fraternal twins result when a mother releases two eggs at the same time and they're separately fertilized by two separate sperm. So these twins share half the genes on average, just like ordinary brothers and sisters. And it's really a beautiful natural experiment that we have here, because what we do is we compare the behavioral or physical similarities of identical twins with fraternal twins. And if identical twins are more alike, this tells us that the genes do make some contribution to the trait in question. But nothing is all genetic or environmental. Every trait has some combination of the two. And you mentioned, just one thing,
yeah, go ahead.
You mentioned twins raised apart before. Now, that's a wonderful other type of natural experiment that I spent many years studying and just written a book called Born Together, Reared Apart, which has all the findings from the Minnesota study. And the beauty of that study is that if you look at identical twins raised in separate families, their similarities can only be due to their shared genes because they have not grown up together.
You say the Minnesota study. I know University of Minnesota is one of several universities, right, that keeps track of large quantities of twins. Virginia Commonwealth also, I think, did operate at one time, so the so-called Virginia 30,000.
That's quite correct. But the University of Minnesota is the only one that did study twins raised apart.
You know, you mentioned that there will be differences, or there can be differences. And so one of the first shocks of my day was that Joy Taylor and Amy Melvin, who are here, they are identical twins. One of them is left-handed, one of them is right-handed. I wouldn't have guessed that that could be the case or that it would be the case. So how common is a difference like that, Nancy Siegel?
Yeah, well, that kind of a difference occurs in about 25% of identical twin pairs. And the reason that happens is that sometimes the fertilized egg divides somewhat late. Remember I said that it can divide anywhere between the first and 14th post-conceptional day. So if the egg divides something like day 8, 9, 10, you already have sidedness or laterality established within that fertilized egg. So one twin develops out of what would have been the left half, and one twin develops out of what would have been the right half. And what's interesting is that some identical twins show not only opposite handedness, but you can show opposite fingerprint patterns, opposite eye dominance, or perhaps opposite birthmarks and moles, many, many different types of things. And you can show any one or any combination of them. But the point is that it affects about 25% of identicals. And many people talk about mirror imaging twins. There's really no such thing as a mirror image twin, but rather it's mirror imaging of certain types of effects, certain traits show these reversals.
Well, Dr. Nancy Siegel, I mean, the blunt instrument view of all this, based on a lot of research that kind of got going, I think maybe in the late 60s and spread into the 70s, 80s, 90s, on twins and on twinning, the blunt instrument takeaway for a lot of us who think bluntly and don't have the kind of sophistication and nuance that someone like you has, is that it seemed to turn out that heredity was incredibly important, that things would show up in terms of psychological traits, political preferences, you name it, particularly in these identical twins separated at birth, the situations in which they were reared in radically different environments did not suppress the incredible similarities between the two of them. It really kind of became, once again, at the level of kind of popular consumption, became this argument for the preeminence of genetics, the preeminence of heredity over environment, over nurture. How fair a conclusion is that to draw?
Here is how I would put it. I think you're pretty much correct, but I think I'd phrase it just a bit differently. I would say that as we began to study more pairs of twins reared apart and together from the 60s onward, the bottom line became that more and more traits seem to have a genetic component. It's not that nature takes over environment. Remember, everything about us, our physical, our behavioral development, is a function of the two. They're inextricably intertwined. But the bottom line is that many more traits that we thought were largely environmentally influenced did turn out to have a substantial genetic component, political attitudes, social attitudes being some very prime examples of that. There is really nothing that we've measured in our laboratories that does not show a genetic component, but the genetic component varies from trait to trait. So it might be very high for something like body height or body weight, but it drops down a little bit for intelligence, somewhat less for personality, and job satisfaction may be 30% genetically influenced. So there is some hierarchy there of how much genes affect certain traits. But really, the surprise was that things like social attitudes, political attitudes, religiosity, how much are you involved in religious life, not your religious affiliation, which tends to come from your family, but the degree to which you are involved in religious activities seems to have a genetic effect. We studied a fascinating pair of twins who were separated at birth and did not meet till they were 45, one raised Jewish and one raised Christian. And in their respective homes, they both were very, very religious, and they understood religiosity when they met. It was just a fascinating take. And they understood it in a way that their adopted siblings, whom they were raised with, just did not get.
We're talking to Dr. Nancy Siegel, getting kind of a crash course in twin science. So just another thing worth mentioning, here in the U.S., the rate of twins per 1,000 in the population has really gone up a lot in recent decades. Tell us about that and why science thinks it's happening.
Yes, the twinning rate has gone up very, very dramatically, particularly since 1980, in the United States, in Canada, in Europe, in other Western nations. Now, the reason it's gone up, and I'll give you the figures, in 1980, 1 in 60 babies born were twins. In 2010, the year for which we had the last reliable statistics, 1 in 30. And the reason is twofold. About two-thirds of the increase is due to the fact that there are so many assisted reproductive technologies available now, in vitro fertilization, fertility drugs, all these kinds of things. This tends to increase the fraternal twinning rate much more than the identical twinning rate, although the identical twinning rate has gone up as well, partly because doctors are better able to manage multiple birth pregnancies, but also because when you do in vitro fertilization, which means that you fertilize eggs with sperm in a petri dish in the lab and then insert them into the womb, that process may tend to encourage splitting of the egg. Now, the other third of the increase is due to the fact that mothers are delaying the childbearing years in order to complete an education, to establish their careers. And what this will do is it brings you into those late 30s, early 40s, where it's harder to become pregnant. So these mothers will seek assisted reproductive technologies. But at the same time, an older mother who does become pregnant has a greater chance of giving birth to fraternal twins. You can think about fraternal twinning as a reproductive error, albeit a nice one, because mothers are not supposed to release two eggs. They're supposed to release one. That's what the human female body is meant to carry. But as one gets older, sometimes two eggs are released, and if enough sperm are around, they will be fertilized and give birth to fraternal twins.
The other thing that fascinates me is that there is a sort of a geographical concentration of twinning, too. And we see it, I guess, most prevalently in West Africa, in Benin and Nigeria. There are theories that, that Yoruba people eat a certain kind of yam that may stimulate or may release a chemical that stimulates the ovaries in a certain way. What can you tell us about this geographical distribution issue?
What we believe is that fraternal twinning, but not identical twinning, does have a genetic component. And so when you look at population differences, you're going to find different concentrations of twins, fraternal twins, that is. So they occur with very high frequency in those two countries you mentioned, Benin and Nigeria, particularly Nigeria among the Yoruba tribe, where I believe twinning is something like 1 in 22 births. But it is actually higher in Benin now. Yoruba was the highest one for a long time, but now it's been taken over by Benin. And the idea that it's caused by that yam that they eat has really not been substantiated. It's a theory. They found that members of the Yoruba tribe who then moved away to the cities and really got off of that diet still had the very high twinning rate. So twinning is highest among African populations. It occurs with intermediate frequency among Caucasians and lowest among Asian populations.
Dr. Nancy Siegel, I've got two sets of identical twins here in the studio. I don't know what you're studying these days or what your interests are or what your pervasive or prevailing curiosity is about identical twins. Is there anything you'd like to know from our two sets of twins here?
Well, I would love to know whether or not they were in school together, in elementary school, junior high, high school, if their schools had mandatory separation policies or if they allowed their parents the freedom to make their own decision for what was best for the twins and how they reacted to these decisions. The reason I pose this, Colin, is that this is a very serious issue for parents who have young twins about to enter school for the first time. Many schools maintain mandatory policies of separation, and this is not helpful to the twins, who not only have to leave home and their parent, but have to separate from a twin as well. And so my take on this is that schools should leave it up to the parents. That parents should need to decide these things.
All right, well,
I'm very interested in hearing from the twins in your studio what their experiences have been and what their thoughts are on this.
They do have thoughts about this, which they were sharing even before the show began. So, Roger, since you were nodding the hardest while that was going on, you get to start out.
Sure, sure. My wife and I just had our two girls, and we talk a lot about things that we would do differently because of the experiences that my twin and I had.
Wait, are your two girls twins?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, they're identical. Okay. And they're 3 weeks and about 4 or 5 days old now.
They're here in the studio.
Yeah, you might have heard them before. And when we think about school and what a benefit I think it was to have my twin in some classes, it was more fun for me. But I don't think teachers liked it. I think that our confidence and independence are two very different things. And our confidence with each other has always been stronger. Our focus might not be, but our ability to trust in ourselves is always increased when we're with one another. And so,
do you think that being in the same classroom hindered your independence or self-concept in any way?
Not at all. The classes we had together, I really enjoyed. And I think that if I do have the say, which we haven't looked into our town's, you know, our future children's school yet, but I will say that we'll do everything we can to keep them together. When they separated us for good, it was eighth grade, and it was those 2 years in middle school where life is really horrible for everyone, and seventh grade was awesome. We had every single class together because it was alphabetical. Everyone in our class, their last name started with a C-A-S, and so every teacher either really enjoyed having the two of us because we had different opinions that really – again, it's that control thing. One of us is going to think one, and the other one is probably going to try and oppose it just for the sake of opposing.
Well, I'm interested to know whether Danny has the same opinion as you do about what you're saying right now. Do you?
Well, as far as our confidence levels when we're together, I think that it helps us immensely, that it always makes us feel like we're going to perform at our best. But I do think that it does hinder our independence slightly.
No.
I think that. You might disagree with me. Maybe I'm disagreeing because I need to.
The worst thing that ever happened was getting us apart.
It causes us to be more, dare I say, normal and try to take our own path.
Which, again, is the worst thing.
Yeah. See, I always thought Roger was a little smarter than me, so when we were together, I'm not going to lie, I tried to cheat off him.
And you said before the show that you did that in, perhaps to your detriment, too.
Yes. Yeah. It really wasn't helping me long term. Now, I also thought it was fun for while we were going through school when we played sports together. Mm-hmm. Because there's nothing more that a coach loves than putting two twins against each other to see which one comes out on
top.
There's
no winner, ever.
But actually, I think there's nothing more a coach likes than having two twins on the same team. Because I've studied twin athletes, and they have this amazing knowledge of one another. They work together beautifully. And think about the opposing team. They can't distinguish between the two. So it's a real benefit to the home team. But both of your comments about the self-confidence, I think, are very important. And I really hope that parents and educators are hearing that. Because it sounds like you got a lot of benefits from being together. Now, you say that one of you said that independence was hindered slightly. I think that the bottom line there is that you just simply have to monitor each twin's progress in the classroom, and if that happens, then maybe you could sit at different tables or take some separate classes. But the point is that I think you have to tailor the education program to meet the needs of every twin. One thing I want to point out, too, and maybe some of you twins in the audience or in the studio have had this experience, but I have been an expert witness on several cases in which identical twins have been accused of cheating because they turned in the same tests with the same mistakes and the same answers. And I've actually had to go to bat for the twins and say, no, they actually think alike and come to similar solutions and interpret the world in the same way. And that's what's causing that. Have any of you ever had the experience of being wrongly accused of cheating?
Let me go over to Joy and Amy about that because I also want to hear some of their thoughts about the whole separation in classes issue. Were you guys ever accused of, or were your similarities ever mistaken for actual copying or cheating? They're exchanging a very knowing glance before they even speak. They're doing a twin thing right now.
I can't wait to hear this one.
I wish I had an example, but I can't think of one. But we were separated at first grade, and I kind of remember liking that.
Yeah, me too.
And feeling like I could be my own person. And we rebelled against wearing the same clothes at that point, too, because it was always easier to dress us alike. When you're buying clothes, you buy two of everything, but we didn't want anything to do with that.
Well, I think that's important for people to know. Again, I say that there were no mandatory or single policies when it comes to non-twins, so I think there should be no policy when it comes to twins.
I think they kind of made it up as they went along. They didn't really know what to do with us, and they thought, well, we better separate them.
And are you having, do you have the same reaction?
Yeah. I was fine being separated. We had mostly the same friends, so I didn't really notice or feel bad about being separated in classes and stuff. And then by the end of high school, we knew we were going to separate colleges. We didn't want to be always compared to each other.
And the first time in our lives, we had to tell people we were twins. they didn't automatically know.
Well, you know, this is something that somebody we're going to hear a little bit later from Phyllis McDowell, and it raised kind of an interesting question. Do you guys feel when you aren't with one another, when you were at college or in other situations, do you feel as though everybody would just know you were a twin anyway? That there's something kind of so essential about that you know everybody must know that I have a twin sibling somewhere.
I didn't have that feeling. I liked telling people, but I didn't. It was kind of nice not telling people too, because you know, not being compared to somebody.
Ah, the comparison. Why can't you be more like your brother?
I love telling everyone.
When people know you're a twin, they kind of look at you differently. It's a kind of a funny thing. You start to wonder, what is the other one like? Yeah. And you wonder if they'll be the same or different. Very, very fascinating phenomenon.
Dr. Nancy Siegel, you said you studied twins in sports. I assume you focused heavily on the Phoenix Suns. I have this obsession with the Phoenix Suns, who, as you perhaps know, are the only NBA team ever to have twins on their roster, and they've done it twice. They have twins on the roster right now, the Morris twins, identical twins, and they had identical twins on their roster in the mid-1960s. Meanwhile, they also had Robin Lopez, whose twin brother Brooke is also an NBA center, and one of their other big stars was Sean Marion, who has a twin sister.
Yeah. Now, I've been following twins like that, and I find it just fascinating, and I'm looking forward to the twins that are potentially going to be in the Olympics in Sochi. I think that what drives it is the genetic ability. You know, they're born with certain types of predispositions and interests. But what I've heard from twin athletes is that if one can go up to a higher level, the other one knows they can as well. So they kind of push each other on. And they also say when they go home, they have this 24-hour practice partner, someone who is so much like them and really challenges them. So I think that's what maybe drives elite sports performance. And, you know, any person who can perform at that level is fascinating. But when you see it repeated in somebody else, it's just absolutely amazing. And I think that where twinship is a real advantage is a sport like synchronized swimming, where body posture and form is so important. And, of course, identical twins are completely matched in this. And there have been some examples of identical twin synchronized swimmers.
It almost seems like cheating. You're listening to a show we did back in January. We loved this so much, and we wanted to share it with you again. We're away this week. That's why we're doing it. It's a show about twins. You're hearing Nancy Siegel. She is, in fact, a researcher in psychology who studies twins. You're hearing Joy Taylor and Amy Melvin, two of our favorite twins, Roger and Danny Castanguay, who are two of our other favorite twins. You're going to hear from Phyllis McDowell, a twin living in Chester, in just a second. I want to quickly take a moment to remind you that we are having a fifth anniversary birthday party for the show. That's a September 30th. It's at the Infinity Hall, the new one in Hartford. You are welcome to attend. You'll find out everything you need to know about it by going to WNPR.org/events. It costs a whopping $5 and you get a lot of fun. Then the following night, that's October 1st, that's Wednesday night at Watkinson School, we're doing a really interesting forum on education. I hope you'll avail yourself of the chance to go to that too. Not an education policy forum. Forget that. Those are boring, and at least we're tired of them anyway. This is really kind of about what it means to teach. So go to Watkinson.org. This is part of the Freshly Squeezed series. You are invited to join us.
So good, so far. We have the same mother, but you're closer than a brother. We're genetically identical to each other. So if in the future you get hit by a truck and you're laying in a coma, for me this is good luck. Because when your brain dies and you're in the twilight zone between life and death, just know that I'm your clone. We'll put you on ice or run a respirator when my body starts to fail. Many years later, you'll still be there for me. Yeah, for me. Yes, you'll give me your heart.
All right, we're back. We're talking about identical twins. We have two sets of identical twins. Well, three sets of identical twins here in studio, but one set is two babies. We don't have much to say about being identical twins so far. And joining us also by phone is Dr. Nancy Siegel. She's a professor of psychology at California State University at Fullerton, director of the Twin Studies Center, which she founded in 1991. She's written books about twins and studies twins. I'm going to go to the twins in the studio here, and because we really haven't even kind of talked about some of these really bedrock questions. And I would assume that, first of all, when you guys are encountering the rest of the world, I'm not sure what you call us. I mean, you have like a secret word for non-twins.
Singletons.
So when you're dealing with us singletons. I would imagine, first of all, that we probably project onto you all kinds of qualities that just aren't that realistic, that we assume that you guys have this almost kind of ESP-like bond.
Yes.
You get that a lot,
yes.
Right? And I assume that is, in fact, a projection as opposed to an accuracy.
Because I don't see what you see. Mm-hmm. I just see her. I don't feel like I see her when I look in the mirror. I see myself.
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird. See, I see photos of us from 6 years ago, and if he's making a really big smile, I have a moment or can't even figure it out.
Well, that happens with photos.
We have a debate
going
on right now.
My current Facebook photo is both of us, and it's a big debate. Who's who?
So even when you look at a photo, sometimes you guys are not entirely sure.
Even up till the teenage years.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of variety. Some twins can tell each other apart, and other twins just can't. I mean, what I'm hearing here in the studio is that the male twins seem to have a more of a connection at some level, and the females somewhat less. But these are all variations on the identical twin theme.
And that may not be true, I mean, based on some of the things that I've heard off the air. I'm wondering, I mean, it may be true in some ways and not in others. Because, Roger, you were saying off the air, in fact, you guys did sort of split off at a certain point when you were 16 and kind of went in different directions, at least at the level of nurture or environment, right?
Absolutely. When I was 16, my father and I just couldn't get along anymore, and I moved out and I moved in with my mother. They divorced when my brother and I were 5, and I think that's a really big turning point in anyone's life at that age, and you really lay the foundation for who you're going to be. And my mother's outlook versus my father's outlook, probably one of the reasons things didn't work out, is she was more of a enjoy the moment, take it easy, treat yourself better, and she was more positive in every way and optimistic about so many things. And she was a big fan of failing in order to learn, and so she always told me, and this is something I've lived by, is the answer is always no unless you ask. And so then there's Danny, who lived with my dad. And my dad he plays it safe. He works hard. He stays out of any type of trouble, and I hope I'm not filling your words for you. But
well, let's hear what Danny does say about that.
Yeah.
No, I like the structured, strict system that my father put me through. It made me the different sort of man that I am today from yourself. I eventually went into construction just like Dad, and I like going out and splitting wood and drinking beer and pretending I'm a little dad. And and our paths definitely separated drastically from the way we live our lives. I don't regret it.
I do.
Well, Dr. Siegel, you were talking about what you were hearing in terms of connection versus no connection. I'll just tell you that here in the studio, what I noticed is that that Amy and Joy look at each other a lot more as they're talking, as if they're, in some ways, I don't know, I feel as though you guys actually do have a connection that's a different kind of connection than these guys do. But is there a way that you can characterize what's happening when the two of you are communicating?
It goes back to that question of what's it like to be a twin. Of course, we don't know what it's like to not be one. But I do think we have similar thoughts, so maybe that is ESP.
Well, here, Colin, let me just interject something here. I didn't mean to imply no connection between those two. It was a different type of connection, and clearly they are, close, identical twins. But there really is no such thing as ESP. I think what twins do is they express ESP-like events because they do respond to the world in similar ways. They have similar thoughts, similar reactions, which is what you'd expect from people who are genetically the same. And so what may seem like ESP to us is really just their similar thought processes. There is no evidence for ESP at all. When we studied twins raised apart, they had no clue, most of them, that they were even twins, and they'd stumbled upon this just accidentally when they were searching for biological family members. So I think that is a misconception held by many people. We interpret this twin closeness as a parapsychological communication when, in fact, it's just a reflection of their similar genes responding to the world in similar ways.
What I'm just noticing, my own observation here in the studio, is that Amy and Joy collaborate a little bit more on their answers, that Roger and Danny kind of answer separately, whereas Amy and Joy are kind of looking at each other and almost finishing each other's sentences or kind of swapping phrases off a little bit as they go. And one thing that I'm curious about for Amy and Joy is, what's the longest amount of time you've been separate? How long have you ever gone without seeing one another?
Currently,
they're currently looking at each other.
Hardly. We see each other every day or every other day, but going away to college was being separate for a long time.
So that would be months.
Months, but I remember suddenly just getting desperate to see her, and I called our older sister and I said, I need to see Amy. Can you come get me? And she did. she knew that I needed to see her.
And could you put words into why you needed to see her? Or was it just a primal thing that
didn't
really
have a
language?
It was like a lonely, there was an empty place, I guess. It was just something wasn't quite complete.
Okay, now one of the questions I think people always have is, to what degree do identical twins exploit the fact that they look alike? Do they, we'll go to Derek in Windsor right now, who has a question about that. Hi, Derek.
Yes, Colin. Great show. I had a question to find out if any of the twins in your office there, if they had ever used each other's document. I know of, not actually know, I heard of a twin who one had a driver's license, and then they both would use it, and they had the same name pretty much, and so that would cause some kind of confusion.
All right. I just have to say, I don't think I've ever had guests in the studio like this, where every time something comes up, each set of identical twins looks at each other, exchange a very knowing glance, or in the case of the guys, sort of a soft punch on the shoulder or something like that. So this is obviously a meaningful question. So based on body language, well, she's drinking water right now, so I'll go to her after that. So first of all, why don't you guys, Danny, answer that question.
Have I ever used any type of identification?
Yeah, or, I mean, we can even expand it.
I definitely used his college ID to get a discount at Apple, so when I bought my computer. Yeah. Other than that,
nice.
I don't think I've I've ever tried getting away with anything like that. No.
We really should have taken advantage of the Six Flags.
Mm. Yeah.
Things
could've
like that.
Could have saved some money.
There's so many things that our father, unfortunately, raised us too honest. he got both of those things in, but there's so many things, and the thing is we've always talked about it, and I feel the same way about a lot of twins we meet, is they always talk about it. Mm-hmm. We really need to instate some type of master list of all the things we should and enforce should be doing as twins.
And so you've never I mean, for example, if one watches TV shows and stuff, and there are always these things where one guy shows up for the other guy's date or something like that, you have never done things like that.
There was a girl we fought over once, and she played us for it. She, there was this one girl when we were in Green Manor. What was her name? Doesn't matter. Because she played us. She basically said, "I'll choose in 3 days." And we both wanted to date her. And by the time the 3 days were up, both of us were like, "Forget her. This is horrible. This is." I think by the end of it, we had both kissed her and realized this just isn't worth it.
Yeah,
it's better to just. For us to stay friends.
the idea of sharing a driver's license or sharing the pass to Six Flags or whatever, that brings up an important point, Colin, about the financial expenses that are associated with raising twins, because some families go from no children to two or one child to three, and it's a real burden on families. And so I've really been an advocate for twin college scholarships, and in fact there is a website that lists about 7 or 8 colleges that offer 2-for-1 twin scholarships or 15% or some percentage of a discount for tuition. I think that there are some clothing stores, too, that offer discounts for parents with toddler twins. The twins in the audience who have twins might want to take advantage of that.
Well, Roger wants to know right away. I mean, the minute you said expense, he looked over his shoulder at the...
Yeah, no, it's true. I think, in fact, the magazine is called Tykes Alike, and I think that you can find it from that. But I think these are very important considerations that we need to think about in drafting policies for twins. And another interesting issue is that When twins are born, there is no DNA analysis done to confirm whether they're identical or fraternal, and I think that is absolutely something that hospitals should arrange or insurance policies should cover, because for parenting, you need to know everything you can about your children, and you just need to have accurate information about them.
I want to just go back to that previous question for Amy and Joy. Have you guys ever fooled us singletons or used each other's documents or exploited your identical qualities for any other kind of gain?
The most we've done I can think of is like if someone sees me in Stop and Shop and thinks I'm Amy, and I don't want to stop and explain I'm not, I'll just say hi.
But we've never used the documents. Yeah. Never occurred to me.
And then when you do tell them that, if you do stop and say, "Well, no, I'm not Amy, I'm her twin Joy," they look at you like, "Oh, I'm seeing a ghost.
Sometimes they freak out and run away.
Yeah. Sometimes they think you're lying.
They think you're lying, then you're like, wait, am I lying?
If you don't want to talk to me, then just don't talk to me. Don't pretend you're a twin.
Yeah. Well, Colin, there are a set of identical twins in government, the Castro brothers in Texas. And you know that when one of them was the mayor and he couldn't come to a certain event, his twin brother stepped in and nobody was the wiser. But when they eventually found out, he had a little bit of trouble there.
Yeah, the Castro brothers are, I think, interesting to watch because they are rising stars in the Democratic Party. One of them gave the keynote address at the last national convention. We could have our first identical twin president.
Actually, there have been such pair in Poland a few years ago. Mm-hmm. The president and prime minister were identical twins. But, of course, you're right. It would be the first pair in this country.
Yeah, first pair in this country. And so, I mean, you want to talk about comparisons and stuff. Well, your brother's president of the United States. What can you do?
What can you do?
You have to become Chief Justice of the Supreme Court or something. All right. So we're going to take another break here. We'll come back. We've got a lot of calls. We've got a lot of areas to get into. We're talking about identical twins. We'll be back.
Have I got trouble? My pretty little chicken got a dead ring of double. I thought it was. Up until I kissed her, I sure had fun. Then smack, bam, boom, whoops, wrong one.
I usually do these announcements by myself, but my identical twin sister Kalina is here, so let's just do them together.
Today's show was produced by Betsy Kaplan and me.
Our executive producer is Katie Talarski.
Our interns are Jackie Lauper, Tess Aronson, and Anna Novak.
The part of Bill Curry was played by the Olsen twins.
Tucker Ives appeared in our opening segment.
For articles, links, videos, and photos of the Faith, Milton Show staff dressed as their evil twins,
visit WNPR.org.
And now, back to Colin. Hey, you want to get lunch?
I was going to ask you the same thing.
Indian?
Definitely.
All right, so the twins are there. Actually, they like that. The twins in the studio like that little last little exchange. All right, so apparently Indian is the right answer.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, that is. Okay. So first of all, we got a call from Matthew in New Haven, who actually wants to get into a subject that we were already preparing to get into. So Matthew in New Haven, hi, you're on the air.
I'm calling in because I'm a twin. I lost my twin. We were both born very premature, and he passed away after a week. But I have spent most of my life sort of with a vague sense of that loss, sort of, I guess, what you were talking about earlier, that kind of confidence you had with your twin, that sense of I wasn't quite at my peak, that I was missing that other half, if you will. And so I was just kind of curious about twin studies on twins who have grown up having lost a twin.
Yes, Matthew, that's a good question, and thank you for sharing that with us. I have a study that looks at twin loss, and I restrict it to twins whose twins have died at 15 or later just because they've had a relationship with one another. But there are studies that I've read and reviewed of twins like yourself who lost a twin very close to birth. And it's a real loss, and I think it's one that is largely underappreciated by many people. I think the theme that I get from it is mostly a sense of promise unfulfilled, in the sense that twinship is a very important and very meaningful relationship, and we see more and more twins around us all the time. And so when you know that you've come close to that opportunity, that you could have had someone with you, a partner, lifelong, I think it's this idea that you're missing out on something very significant. So, it's a very, very real loss, and I think that more bereavement counselors should be aware of it.
On the subject of twin mortality, we did talk earlier this week to Phyllis McDowell. Phyllis McDowell is, among many, many other things, the mother of Doobie McDowell, who occasionally appears on this show, and in fact will be on the show on Friday, on the nose. Phyllis is a twin, and I think you may hear a wrong number in this interview. I double-checked, and she and her twin sister were alive together, sharing an earthly existence for 86 years, and her twin sister died, I think, about a year ago. So we asked Phyllis to try to describe what that's like, what it's like to suddenly not be on Earth with your identical twin. We're talking to Phyllis McDowell, who for 83 years shared planet Earth with her sister Jane, her twin sister, her identical twin sister Jane. So, Phyllis, the first thing I'm going to ask you is, You know a lot of people, including your own offspring, who are not identical twins. If you had to try to explain to someone what it's like to be an identical twin, how it's different to be and have an identical twin from the life the rest of us lead, would you be able to explain it?
Well, probably only by little snippets of examples of what it's like. I remember Jane and I could laugh for hours about some little incident at the post office. Nobody else would think it was funny.
Well, let me talk a little bit about a difficult topic, which is losing a twin. This is something that you've experienced. And so explain what that feels like.
That is still very sort of current with me. Well, I think it brings back a rash of memories as we older people tend to live a little bit in the past. The first time Jane and I went on a trip together, and when we parted at the airport, I hadn't expected to feel such a sense of loss. We had gotten very used to being twins again on this trip, which happened to be a sort of mountaintop lodge, and it was great fun. So we reverted back a little bit to the fun of being twins.
How is life different now? Does it feel, obviously, whenever we lose a loved one, it's hard and that loved one stays in our thoughts. But once again, I think those of us who are on the outside looking in at the experience of being a twin assume that this is an even more severe sense of loss, that almost it's almost like losing a real part of your own body or something.
There's a little of that, indeed. There is a loss, a few dreams. And I think I'm used to the fact that the world, or my little world, doesn't see me as a twin, but in my dreams, they are often include Jane.
So, in your dreams, you're still a twin.
Yes.
Phyllis McDowell, it's been wonderful to talk to you. Thank you for sharing such a personal story.
Well, thank you, Colin.
Well, before we sort of circulate this whole very incredibly difficult question with our panel, I do want to say that as during the beginning of that interview, when Phyllis was talking about this, the capacity of twins to laugh at something that nobody else would understand, something that had happened in the post office, Amy and Joy immediately convulsed. What was that laughter?
You wouldn't understand. Because some of the things you were saying before, you know, you're born at the same time and you spend most of the early part of your life together. So not only genetically, but you have the same memories that trigger, you know, the same experiences, so it might trigger the same memory.
We even had the same dreams, which got weird. So
I've heard that before.
Yeah.
Same dreams. Well, you know, on that subject of mortality, Roger, I know this is something that you've been giving a little bit of thought to, and obviously you're a very, very committed twin brother. It must be very difficult to think about the idea of someday, you know, ideally 50, 60, 70 years from now, being on the planet without your brother.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's like worst possible twin thing to even consider. And, you know, my heart goes out to anyone who's lost their twin. And I really, that moment, Phyllis, was it?
Yes, Phyllis, yeah.
You know, describing seeing Jane in her dreams. It's, oh, man. Like, that's rough. That's really rough. In 2001, we lost our older brother, and I think when that happened, we started considering the possibility of life without the other one, without the other half of the twinship. And the older we get, the more real that becomes. But when we were younger, we would always say, you know, we'll do it together. We'll,
you jump, I jump.
Right. I think that's a line from Titanic. Oh, God.
You know, Colin, the idea of twins losing a twin is really something unthinkable to most twins, as Roger was describing. I was at a twin convention once as a researcher, and there was a small group of twins whose twins had died, and they were meeting for a little session together, and everyone was invited, but the intact twin pairs just could not go there. In my twin studies, I find that the loss of a twin, whether identical or fraternal, is rated as more devastating than the loss of any other relative, whether it's a parent, a non-twin sibling, an aunt or uncle. The only comparisons I have not been able to make, fortunately, are the loss of a child, because very few twins have lost a child. But the loss of a twin is just up there with the loss of a spouse. It's a very, very devastating loss. And if any of your listeners out there have lost twins and would like to be part of my study, I can send a questionnaire, or they could go to my website, which is drnancysiegeltwins.org.
Well, we're going to try to end the show on a less grim topic, because we're having so much fun in general here with the identical twins and the whole subject of identical twinship. We've got a call here from Dan in Southbury. Hi, Dan. Hi, Dan. You're on the air. Dan appears not to be ready right now. I think he was asking, we wanted to ask about twin language. He and his brother have their own language. No one else can understand them. So you're shaking your head. No, nothing like that for you guys. How about for you guys?
Yes, I don't remember it, but when we were real young, apparently we did.
Our aunt said we sounded like aliens.
It's nonverbal, as you see.
It was kind of like we didn't use full sentences. We just had to say a few words, and we got it.
And Nancy Siegel, how common is that, these sort of almost kind of alternative systems of communication?
Yeah, well, it's very, very common, because these children are in close proximity to one another, and they understand the world the same way. The danger in that is that if their relationship is restricted basically to one another, they may be slower to develop ordinary speech, and so when they go to school, they may be a little bit behind. Most twins do recover quickly, but it may take just a little bit of separation and a little bit more interaction with a parent or an older sibling who can really allow them opportunities to speak and be understood.
I'm going to sort of summarize another caller's question here, and you guys have kind of answered it already, although actually before I do that, I just wanted to ask Danny and Roger a question, sort of back to that. You guys never had your own individual language, but I do notice that you guys communicate a little bit more kinetically, you know, physically with one another. I mean, is that the substitute version, that you have your own sort of system of shoves and sort of, you know, male brother types of things?
Well, body language can say a lot when you grow up watching each other and the way we react to things and the way we think about things. And like she's saying, that we've been experiencing everything together for so long that we interpret things and process things so identically.
So you don't even have to use the words. It's something else. Really quickly, somebody wanted to know, and you guys have already answered this a little bit. Somebody wants to know, do you ever get these things where you do suddenly know, even though one of you is living 100, 200 miles away from the other, that you're having the other one's person having a bad day or something's going on? There isn't that kind of psychic umbilical cord even around more critical junctures, right?
No.
Yeah. And so, Roger, one last question for you. I understand that it's your plan not to tell these 3-week-old babies who are here, I mean, not now, obviously, but for as long as possible, not have them know who's older, which one's older. You have to answer really quickly. You're almost out of time.
No, that's right. No, no one can hold any age over the other one. Danny is 7 minutes and how many?
21 seconds.
Older than me. So
in your face.
They will not have that for one another. Maybe on their 18th birthday, we'll let them know who's older.
I think that's an excellent plan.
Okay. Thank you.
I tell parents to do the same thing.
All right. Nice. We're out of time. Thanks to all of you. You guys have been great guests. This has been a really fun show. Thanks very much to Kyone Wolf and her twin, Kalina, for helping to produce it. And we'll be back tomorrow.
I'm Kyone.
I'm Kalina Wolf.
No, Kalina, this is just something I do at the end of every show. It's like, Kyone, we have the same voice. Why wouldn't I do it?
Kalina, this is my job to say something funny at the end of the show. Why
are
what
are you going to do if I say, I'm Kyone Wolf?
Oh, please,
two
no.
Twins walk into a bar.
No.
Ouch. Am I right? This job is easy.
I hate you sometimes.